That was a Fritz Kreisler arrangement of a Granado Spanish dance. And preceding that, the Suite Popular Español by Manuel de Falla, performed by Itzhak Perlman from his Spanish album. This has been Valerie Jean here at WUSB in Stony Brook. Stay tuned for Stardate. And following that, Eric Corley will be here. He already is here, but he'll be on with Brain Damage here at 90.1, Long Island's first station of the 90s, WUSB.
Stardate June 16th. That ruddy light near the moon tomorrow morning is the red planet Mars. You'll find Mars and the moon in the southeast before the sun comes up. The planet isn't nearly as bright as Venus, which lies in the same part of the sky. But for tomorrow morning only, Mars and the moon are separated by only about 6 degrees, while Venus lies some 40 degrees below and to the left of the pair in the pre-dawn sky. Mars has appeared for some months to move rapidly in front of the stars, and so it's crossed a number of constellation boundaries. But it's now in front of the constellation Pisces, and it'll remain in front of Pisces through the end of this month. Mars was visible in the pre-dawn sky last winter and spring. Now it's getting more conspicuous for two reasons. One is that we're getting closer to it. The distance between our two worlds is decreasing as Earth pulls up behind the red planet in the race of the planets around the sun. The second reason for Mars looking more conspicuous is that it appears a greater distance away from Venus on the dome of the sky now than it did a few months ago. Venus is so bright that it makes any other planet look dim. By the way, Mars will soon reach a hallmark in its orbit around the sun, its perihelion, or closest point to the sun. That's coming up on June the 30th. This is Stardate. It's produced by Deborah Bird. We'd like to send you a copy of our Stardate magazine. We're proud of it, and we think you'd enjoy it. If you'd like to see a copy, send your name and address and $1 to the University of Texas McDonald Observatory. We're in Austin, Texas. Our zip code is 78712. And by the way, would you please let us know where you listen to Stardate? What station do you hear it on? For the McDonald Observatory, I'm Joel Block.
We now return to our recording, already in progress.
What did you say?
We now return to our recording, already in progress.
What did you say?
We now return to our recording, already in progress.
What did you say?
We now return to our recording, already in progress.
What did you say?
We now return to our recording, already in.
Come gather round, people, wherever you roam, and admit that the waters around you have grown, and accept it that soon you'll be drenched to the bone. If your time to you is worth saving, then you better start swimming or you'll sink like a stone. For the times we are a-changing. Some writers and critics who prophesize with your pen, and keep your eyes wide, the chance won't come again. And don't speak too soon, for the wheel's still in spin. And there's no telling who that it's naming. For the loser now will be later to win. For the times they are a-changing. From senators, congressmen, please heed the call. Don't stand in the doorway, don't lock up the hall. For he that gets hurt will be he who has stalled. A battle outside raging will soon shake your windows and rattle your walls. For the times they are a-changing. Mothers and fathers throughout the land,
And don't criticize what you can't understand. Your sons and your daughters are beyond your command. Your old road is rapidly aging. Please get out of the new one if you can't lend your hand. For the times, they are a-changing. The curse, it is cast. The slow one now will later be fast, as the present now will later be past. The order is rapidly fading, and the first one now will later be last. For the times, they are a-changing.
Coming up next is your program, Moscow Mailbag.
Welcome to another edition of Moscow Mailbag. I'd just like to say that this one was prepared by Irina Soltsova of our staff. Today, Hemingway, how well known is the name in this country? McDonald's food in Moscow, do Muscovites like it? The convertible ruble, how far away is that? And other questions and answers. The first question comes from Bill Breland of Charleston, South Carolina, and he writes the following.
I wonder what has really happened to Joe Adamov, who suddenly disappeared from the Moscow Mailbag program. I heard your explanation that he suddenly decided on his own to leave the program, but I questioned that explanation then, and I question it even more today. I believe he has become too outspoken, too honest about past events in the USSR and on Radio Moscow, and that your KGB, in its infamous style, took him off the air.
Well, dear Mr. Brolin, I guess you still believe the KGB is burning midnight oil fishing for signs of disloyalty of Radio Moscow reporters. Well, if you listen to our programs, don't you think that by this time half the staff would already be behind bars? By the way, it wasn't just me who explained the mysterious disappearance of Joe Adamov. He was on the air himself telling you why he did that. Well, rumors at Radio Moscow have it that Joe is planning to come back this fall. So just wait and see whether it's true. James Marion Sims of Montgomery, Alabama, writes this.
I'm a junior in college, and I'm writing a research paper on the short stories of Ernest Hemingway. Is he popular in Russia?
Ernest Hemingway is perhaps one of the best examples of officially recognized writers whose virtues have been extolled beyond all measure. Probably best known among the general public here by his novels Farewell to Arms, For Whom the Bell Tolls, The Old Man and the Sea, and others. He was described in numerous literary articles as an outstanding representative of American literature, an artist of huge and original talent, or one of the most noted writers of the 20th century. It was probably not so much his literary work as his views and anti-military social activity that gained him such acclaim. He was just as famous for his counterintelligence activities in Cuba, participation in Spain's Civil War, and journalistic work as for his novels. Literary critics in this country kept track of all the writer's publications in America, and as soon as an unknown story was uncovered, introduced the Soviet public to it in what is called here thick magazines, quite popular literary monthlies translated into many languages of the Soviet Union. For example, when the FBI file on Ernest Hemingway was brought to light, that little sensation was fanned up here with newspapers splashing vindictive headlines like, Hemingway was the victim of the FBI. Honestly, there are a great many lovers of his creative art, yet I was never among his admirers. That's a direct quote from Irina Soltsova, who wrote that program. Here's a question from Cyril B. Knight of Regina, South Carolina.
How are new measures in the economy succeeding? What new initiatives are being taken? What are the steps in foreign trade?
Well, few economists in this country refuse to admit these days that the economic reform is in a stall. Prices are rising, the scarce goods are disappearing from the shelves, and popular unrest is growing. The plan, outlined by the government late last year, is now recognized for what it really is, a half-hearted attempt to haul the country out of the crisis by old methods. There is now much talk of a more rapid introduction of a market system, which involves the freedom of enterprise, price reforms, the setting up of first stock exchanges, and a banking business reform. The new reform package presented by Prime Minister Nikolai Ryzhkov before the session of the Supreme Soviet also provides for price increases already next year. Enterprises are to be granted freedom in dealing with their partners and state subsidies cut. So there is a whole number of proposals to speak of. But let's see first how these are implemented. So far, we've only been waiting for the results.
Albert S. Lobel of San Diego, California writes, I've heard in our radio broadcast that the Soviet government is trying to work out a way that rubles can be exchanged for currency from Western countries. How will this affect the ability of the average Russian citizen to exchange rubles for dollars or any other Western currency?
A convertible ruble will crown the economic reform, coming last and not before Soviet goods are competitive on the world market and the internal market is stabilized. Now, to say that the convertibility of the ruble will therefore be put off till better times would be wrong, but for an average Soviet citizen to be able to do that, I guess we'll have to wait a little. Right now, the only legitimate way for Soviets to exchange rubles for Western currencies is at the customs when they are leaving the country to go on a trip or are emigrating.
Tim Bjorklund of Thunder Bay, Ontario, has this question. I find it great that other people in the world find McDonald's very good. Here in Thunder Bay, there are four McDonald's. My favorite food there is Big Mac. What is the Soviets' favorite food at McDonald's?
The first McDonald's that opened in Moscow this January is the biggest in the world, but in terms of its menu, it offers quite a limited choice of products. Yet there are Big Macs, hamburgers, cheeseburgers, apple pie, filet-o-fish, and soft drinks, sundaes, and milkshakes. The only thing I hear from people who have been there is that they like it all, because the food is well-prepared, tasty, and it's hard to make a choice of what is best. Many people are ordering takeaway packages carrying home not just Big Macs, but milkshakes as well. So to be able to answer the question of which is the favorite product with the Soviets, let's just wait till they get used to it. The only thing I can tell you is that I find apple pies delicious.
David Craig of Shelbyville, Indiana writes, the favorite sport of students here is basketball. What is number one in the used to sell?
Statistics tell us that the most popular sport in this country is track and field, with well over 7.5 million people going in for it regularly. Next comes volleyball and skiing. Football, or soccer to be exact, comes fourth, and then basketball. Over 4 million people prefer basketball over everything else. Curiously, swimming rates only ninth, preceded by chess and ping pong. These are professional sports, though, and they do not offer a true picture of popularity of sports among the general public. In summer, many people go hiking and play soccer, whereas in winter, skiers swarm all the nearby wooded areas and parks in large and small cities alike. Tennis is gaining popularity, too, though it is still thought of as a prestigious elitist sport requiring expensive gear and courts.
And now, a couple of questions from Tony Spiegel, who lives in Mount Vernon, Ohio. Let's see how many we can handle today. The first one is, what are the oblasts, regions? How many are there in the USSR?
Well, an oblast, as you wrote quite correctly, is an area adjacent to a big city. So it is primarily the city itself and all the surrounding little townships. To say how many there are in the Soviet Union, I'd have to be exact in the number of big cities, which are legion. Say there are dozens of thousands of oblasts. How does that sound? Okay, well, let's take the other questions.
I understand there are always shortages of supplies and that customers must be forever standing in long lines to get even the most basic items. Is waiting in long lines a basic and unavoidable part of everyday life?
Well, for the majority of people, yes. For all those who rely on state-run shops for food and clothing. And lines take as much as over an hour each day for an average Soviet person, whatever that stands for. Now, some people get around lines. These fall into a number of groups, some associated with the service and trade industry, and have access to these goods. Some people have access and money to buy things on the black market for exorbitant prices, but without having to wait in line. Some do not stand in line, even though they belong to neither of these groups, and that's in case someone else does the waiting for them. And yes, I have to admit that lines are not going to disappear before we see a complete overhaul of our economy. Next question, please.
I read that the average Soviet adult, writes Mr. Spiegel, earns about 330 rubles a month. Party dues are 3% of salary and income taxes just 7%. Is this true? How much is 330 rubles in American currency?
Well, income tax, for a quick correction, is 13% and will soon go up as economic reform measures take effect. So, what do we do with this money? Before the price reform is introduced, changing all the figures I'm going to give you, remember, that's been the state of things for decades now. So, that will at least give you an idea of how we lived all these years. Every month, I have to pay for my apartment, a furnished apartment, some 20 rubles a month, which is about 2 days' salary. So rent so far has taken up a small part of my budget. Electricity is also cheap, some 6 rubles a month. Telephone payments are so trivial that I won't even mention them. They're only 2.5 rubles a month. Well, that's excluding long-distance calls. A lot of products here are subsidized by the state, so they work out quite cheap. Meat comes for about 1 ruble a pound. Bread is just a few kopecks a loaf, and that's very cheap. Tea is also inexpensive, although coffee is slightly more costly than in the West, just as eggs are. Meat and meat products, dairy and milk, all these are quite a bit cheaper than, say, in the U.S., but only due to subsidies. Potatoes, cabbage, onions, garlic, they remain quite inexpensive throughout the year. That is, if you can find them in shops. Anyway, food items will get more expensive, about 2 times their current price. And prices for clothing, furniture, and other goods are also supposed to increase in about 6 months. The increases, according to the government plan, will in part be compensated for by wage hikes. But my feeling is, for most of the people, things are going to get worse before they get any better. A transfer of an average salary of a Soviet citizen into dollars is quite a bit more complicated, since the ruble is being devalued each month and there are at least 3 types of exchange rates to go by. The official one remains 60 cents for a ruble. A special rate for tourists is slightly more realistic, about 6 rubles for a dollar. And there is the black market rate, too, about 20 to 25 rubles for $1. At the official exchange rate, a Soviet person's average salary equals about $425 a month, and at the black market rate, about $15 a month. One more question from Mr. Spiegel before we wind up this edition of Moscow Mailbag.
I read that when a male reaches 18 years of age, he owes his government 2 years of active military service. Is this true?
Yes, it is. And the truth is, we have a draft system in the Army, so unless you are excused from the services for reasons of health, you are required to serve a minimum of 2 years. The recent amendments to this system have been introduced in the Baltic republics when they approved a bill granting potential recruits an alternative, mandatory civil service at an industrial enterprise or elsewhere, when political beliefs and religious convictions of a person prohibit service in the Army. The legislation runs counter to this country's constitution, but these republics' parliaments are pushing it through so that maybe sometime from now, the tendency will catch on in the rest of the country. These days, things change overnight. And with this answer to the last question, we end this edition of Moscow Mailbag, and may I remind you that it was prepared exclusively by Irina Solovtsova of Radio Moscow. Thank you very much for being with us, and we welcome your comments and suggestions.
And so do we. We welcome your comments and suggestions here at WUSB. You can write to us, WUSB, Stony Brook, New York, 11794. It's 20 minutes after 10 o'clock, and I might add this is the only station on Long Island that plays Radio Moscow material. Just something to point out there. Well, our phone number is 632-6901. This is Eric Corley. The program is Brain Damage, and these headphones are terrible. Boy, how do we get away with having such lousy equipment in this place? I can't even hear what I'm saying, and I'm wondering, how am I going to hear what my phone callers are saying if I can't hear what I'm saying? Try adjusting it over here. Oh, this is a crisis, folks. This is a big crisis because I can't hear myself, and if I can't hear myself, I can't hear you. So, maybe we won't get any calls. That's something to push for. I'm going to go back to Bob Dylan because he makes me feel good, and I need to be comforted at this stage. Oh, boy. I don't know. I don't even know if what I'm saying is going out over the air. This is horrible. We'll be back soon.
Oh, my name, it ain't nothing. My age, it means less. The country I come from is called the Midwest. I sawed and butter there the laws to abide, and that the land that I live in has God on its side. Oh, the history books tell it, they tell it so well. The cavalry's charged, the Indians fell. The cavalry's charged, the Indians died. For the country was young with God on its side. The Spanish American War had its day, and the Civil War too was soon laid away, and the names of the heroes I've made to memorize, with guns in their hands and God on their side. The First World War, boys, it came and it went. The reason for fighting I never did get, but I learned to accept it with pride. For you don't count the dead when God's on your side. The Second World War came to an end. We forgave the Germans, and and we were friends. Though they murdered 6 million in the ovens they fried, the Germans now too have God on their side. Learn to hate the Russians all through my whole life. If another war comes, it's them we must fight. To hate them and fear them, to run and to hide, and accept it all bravely with God on my side. But now we got weapons of chemical dust. If firing were forced to, then firing we must. One push of the button and shot the world wide. And you never ask questions when God's on your side. Through many dark hours, I've been thinking about this, that Jesus Christ was betrayed by a kiss. But I can't think for you. You have to decide whether Judas Iscariot had God on his side. So now as I'm leaving, I'm weary as hell. The confusion I'm feeling, ain't no tongue can tell. The words fill my head and they fall to the floor. But if God's on our side, he'll stop the next war. Down the street the dogs are barking, and the day is getting dark. As the night comes in falling, the dogs lose their bark. And the silent night was shattered from the sounds inside my mind. Isn't one too many mornings and a thousand miles behind. From the crossroads of my doorstep, my eyes start to fade. And I turn my head back to the room where my love and I have laid. And I gaze back to the street, the sidewalk, and the sign. And I'm one too many mornings and a thousand miles behind. Is a restless, hungry feeling that don't mean no one no good. When everything I'm a saying, you can say it just as good. You're right from your side, and I'm right from mine. We're both just one too many mornings and a thousand miles behind.
And that's Bob Dylan here on Brain Damage. And my apologies for playing so much music, but we had a major crisis here at the station, as we always seem to be having. And I was able to finally kill somebody and steal their headphones, and I'm able to hear myself now, which means I can hear you, the callers, which is the important thing, because if I can't hear you, I'm going to sound awfully silly, you know, trying to respond to things that I imagine you're saying. Anyway, that's the story there. Places a walking den of Murphy's Law kind of things. Trying to find working headphones, I had to battle other things that were breaking down and falling apart, but I was able to get them. At what a cost, but I was able to get them. Our phone number is 632-6901. It's 10:32 in the evening. And yes, this is Brain Damage. I think we're proving it here tonight. Not so much on the air, but by the things that are going on behind the scenes, which... Oh, I wish there was a video of this show, you know? Then you'd be able to appreciate it for what it is. So I guess it's a good thing, actually, that there isn't a video. We have all kinds of neat things going on in the world. How about this? How about Two Live Crew, huh? Imagine that, being arrested after you do a show. You heard the story? You've been following this, folks? This is kind of along the lines of what we've been talking about for a few years now. Censorship at its worst. After doing a rap show in Florida, two members of Two Live Crew were arrested for performing obscenity. Now, it seems really strange that such a thing could happen, but that's exactly what did happen, and it's still going on. In fact, record store owners in Florida are being arrested for selling the record, and record store owners, I believe, in San Antonio, Texas, as well, are being threatened with arrest if they dare to sell the record As Nasty As They Want to Be by Two Live Crew. And folks, guess what that was that just dropped on the table? Yes, listen to this cellophane here. That's cellophane off the Two Live Crew record. I actually went to New York City. Well, I didn't go to New York City to get this, but I was in New York City and I said, hey, what the hell, you know? See if they have this record. And they did, and I bought it. I bought a piece of obscenity, and this is a piece of obscenity sitting right here next to us. Two Live Crew, As Nasty As They Want to Be. It's a double record. It's got four sides. Luke's side, Mr. Mix's side, Brother Marquis's side, and Fresh Kid Ice's side. And executive producer Luke Skywalker, produced by Luke Skywalker and the Two Live Crew. And they thank all kinds of people like MC Twist and the Def Squad, MC Hammer and the Posse, Tone Lock, NWA, Public Enemy, Eazy-E, Jazzy Jeff and Fresh Prince, Kool Moe Dee. You name it, they thank these people. Special thanks to our families for their support. The Ghetto Style DJs, Pitbull Jammers, Ghetto Phase 2, all the boys on Avenue 15th and 61st. And it just goes on and on and on. To all the people that love us, we love you. To all the people that don't love us, well, we can't say that over the air, but that's sort of the spirit of the record. Now, I listened to the entire thing before. Yeah, the entire two-record set of Two Live Crew. And I've been... I survived, let's put it that way. I haven't been completely corrupted by this. But I did say that I was going to come in and play a piece of this record. Now, since it's another key element of the studio that's not working, it's very hard to cue up records. So, we're going to have to play this one by ear, as it is said. And a warning, folks, a warning. You may be offended by what you are about to hear, but you're going to hear it nonetheless on this radio station. Two Live Crew, from As Nasty As They Want to Be, here on WUSB Stony Brook. And I want to see those phones light up now. 632-6901. We'll be right back.
jump and loose step to the above common, then mix this bed. We landed in Napa when walking downtown. We met four females, all of them down. Went to the beach on Paradise Isle. We played water sports and had sex for a while. Before we knew it, it was time to go. Cause the very next day, we had a show. We'll let the people see that two life is ruling.
Back to the crib where we'll be cooling.
Chilling hard, cooling.
You want purity? Tune to the Christian station. This is WUSB in Stony Brook, and we've just corrupted your minds by playing Two Live Crew over the air. And God only knows what's going on out there now. Well, does our signal reach most of Suffolk County into Nassau, Connecticut? Well, I imagine we just have to watch the AP machine. Yeah, that's it, and that'll tell us what's going on as a result of this corruption over the airwaves. We heard a song called Coolin' that was off Fresh Kid Ice's side, and If you strained really, really hard, you managed not to hear any four-letter words because we were careful to pick that song out. We didn't want to offend people, but it doesn't matter. This is still a piece of obscenity because it's on the record, as nasty as they want to be. And you can't buy this in Florida. Mm-mm-mm. You cannot buy this, and you'll get arrested if you try. You'll get arrested if you play it over the air in Florida. You'll get arrested if you even hum a few bars from one of the songs on this this album, apparently. Well, in Duluth, Georgia, someone, please tell me, why is it always the South? I just want to know. You know, what is it? Is it the heat? Is it, you know, the latitude? What? Why is it always the South where these things start? I mean, I know we got plenty of people around here that, that like to control what we listen to and what we say and what we read. But how come it always starts in the South? Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it doesn't always start in the South, but it seems like it does, you know? I guess Mapplethorpe, that was Cincinnati. That's not really the South, is it? But I don't think he would have done too well in Macon, Georgia. Anyway, Duluth, Georgia, a show by the rap group Two Live Crew, wasn't as nasty or as long as the audience wanted, but the group's leader said it proved that Two Live Crew could put on a clean show for teenagers. They said Two Live Crew can't do a clean show and still rock. What we're going to do is we're going to prove them all wrong, Luke Skywalker said during Thursday's performance. His real name, Luther Campbell. I consider it the PG version, said Gwinnett County Police Chief Wayne Bolden as the group finished its last song. Get this, this is the first rap concert I've been to, and I'm kind of enjoying it. I like the beat. I can't see where they violated obscenity laws, but half the words I can't understand anyway, he added. Campbell said another member of the Miami-based rap group were arrested in Florida last weekend after they played songs from their sexually explicit As Nasty As They Want to Be album at an all-adult show. A Florida record store owner who sold the album also was arrested. And the arrest followed a federal judge's ruling that the album violates Florida's obscenity law. The ruling is being appealed. And the band played to an estimated 320 people, roughly half the capacity of the Ozone Club, in this small community about 10 miles northeast of Atlanta. In a brisk 35 minutes, the band performed versions of some of the songs from another of their albums, As Clean As They Want to Be. Oh, really? There's two albums, As Clean As They Want to Be and As Nasty As They Want to Be. I get it. Okay, I didn't know about that one. They didn't have that one at the record store. I guess that one sold out. Which lacks the profanities. The songs they did lack profanities. But each time group members stopped short of singing vulgar lyrics, teenagers in the audience gleefully shouted them out. So what does it all prove, folks? What does it all prove? You know? I mean, it was an adult show, wasn't it? It was an adult show in Florida. They didn't let kids in, you know? And it's language, you know? It's simply language. Why are people so worried about it? I don't know. Let's hear from you. 632-6901. Good evening. Oh, no. No, the phones are broken, too. Hold on. Hold on. Hold on. Be patient. Be patient, sir, while I firebomb the studio or something. Hold on. Hold on. We'll fix it. We'll fix it. Keep talking.
Hi.
Ah.
Yes.
Okay, hold on, hold on, hold on.
Okay.
I'm wiring the board even as I speak. Folks, this may be the first time you actually hear someone get electrocuted over the airwaves because I've got my head stuck inside a board here, and I'm trying to find where the loose connection is. I think I know where the loose connection is. It's in management somewhere, but I'm not going to get into that. Let's see. Well, that doesn't sound too good. Sir, are you still there?
Yes, I'm still here.
Okay, I'm going to close this up now, and hopefully you won't disappear when I do that. Okay, here we go. Are you still there?
I'm still here.
Amazing. Okay, sorry to put you through all that. What's on your mind?
Yeah, I'm glad to hear you put Two Live Crew on. This is Rob down at the Stony Brook Press, and I was catching your show. And
did you get locked in over the summer? Is Stony Brook Press coming out?
It's coming out. It's coming out in a couple of weeks. We're kind of reorganizing the place. But Two Live Crew, they sound great. I'm glad that you found that they were being censored, so you played them on the radio.
Uh-huh. Well, I mean, there's no question.
A great idea, though.
What?
Two Live Crew and NWA at Stony Brook. I can't think of a better use for that field house.
Yeah, you know, I don't think they're ever going to paint it, so we might as well start using it for good concerts. NWA
and Two Live Crew. You can publicize that thing really well.
Uh-huh.
I mean, you know, you just, the ways to publicize that are just...
Well, you know, it's amazing. When Public Enemy first hit the record stores, people reacted to them and thought they were, you know, out of control. Now Public Enemy, they're a bunch of wimps compared to the guys that are coming out now, you know?
A Public Enemy, their message is great, though.
Oh, yeah. I haven't detracted from that, but yeah. It's, you know, it's more outrageous now. And, you know, in a little while, these guys will be looked upon as not being that outrageous. It's, you know, it's all fashion, really, I guess.
But, you know, it's like when they censor them, they're giving them a lot of publicity. So, and then you put them on the air, and I like the idea of, you know...
Hey, if I could show Robert Mapplethorpe pictures over the air, I would do it, believe me. I would.
We'll put Robert Mapplethorpe pictures on the field house while we have Two Live Crew and NWA down there.
How about Robert Mapplethorpe postcards? You send them through the mail, everybody has to see them then, you know?
that's a very creative idea.
Hey, that's what I'm here for, you know,
yeah.
to figure out ways to corrupt people.
Pay you the big bucks over there.
Uh-huh.
Cool. So well, I'm glad to hear your show, and... I just wanted to throw my 2 cents in there.
Okay. Well, let's hope other people do. Thanks for calling.
Okay. Catch.
Oops. Sorry about that. Our phone number is 632-6901. Let's get some calls coming in here. While the electronics here hold together, literally spit and a promise holding things together right now. 632-6901, area code 516 if you're off the island or in Nassau County. And let us know what you think about Two Live Crew, about censorship, about any of that kind of stuff. And here's something out of Southampton in today's paper. Some people, probably Southampton town employees, have been satisfying their erotic fantasies by ringing up $180 worth of calls to adult lines in the past month using town hall telephone lines, according to town officials. How many times did they say town in there? I don't know. Town controller Craig Fuhrer notified the town board Thursday of this how do you pronounce that? Oh, I hate that word. Let's just say of this of evil doings, okay? Immediately after receiving the latest telephone bill showing that 23 calls that almost certainly had nothing to do with town business, such as 6 calls to dial a date and 1 to erotic executive, were made from town hall between May 4th and June 3rd. During an emergency session of the board yesterday, outraged town council members resolved that if they found the perpetrators, they would draw and quarter them. No, okay, they would fire them immediately for improper use of town telephones. Officials have requested a listing of the extensions in town hall where the porn calls originated, including the date and time of call. New York Telephone has agreed to mail the information Tuesday. Oh boy, there's tension in Southampton tonight. Think of it, you know, it's like one of these Twin Peaks kind of thing. You know, it could be somebody we know that made these calls. It could be somebody in this room. Someone's walking around Southampton tonight knowing that they made those calls. And that letter is going out on Tuesday. Next week at this time, we should know who it was. Unless something bizarre happens, you know? Unless someone else is implicated, or somebody murders somebody to get away with it. Or somebody proves that the dial-a-porn numbers called them. Well, anyway, there had never been a previous problem with calls to erotic telephone services. Never. Anybody that gets caught, it's immediate dismissal, said Supervisor George Stavropoulos. The 6 calls to dial a date cost the town $21, and 3 calls to 540-LOVE, I can't believe they give the phone number out, 3 calls to 540-LOVE added up to $28.50, and a call to Incredible Narrative cost an incredible $90.95. You ought to get the real thing for $90, suggested Councilwoman Patricia Newman, only half-joking. A quick check by Newsday revealed that Incredible Narrative is so costly because it's a package deal that involves regular faxing of erotic material to subscribers. I'm not going to get through this story. A breathless male voice asked the caller to leave a telephone number and fax number. Newsday had to call this to find this out, I'll bet, so they're going to get a huge bill, too. A breathless male voice asked the caller to leave a telephone number and fax number. Many of the adult telephone services involved recorded female voices making suggestive sexual sounds. I wish somebody out there would just start up a service where they provide that for the cost of a phone call. It would put all these rip-off people out of business, you know? Suggestive sexual sounds, $25 for that? You know? Come on. I'm sure you can pay somebody minimum wage to do that over the phone. Anyway, during its meeting yesterday, the board also scrapped calling cards issued to elected officials and heads of department. Elected officials, huh? Even though calling card calls totaled only $20.39 of the current telephone bill of $3,981.38 for town hall, officials said the calling pattern indicates some abuse of the cards. Except I don't think you can use calling cards to call 540 numbers, I don't think. I'm about to find out, though. Fuhrer said steps would be taken to increase the use of telephone directories and reduce the use of directory assistance. Directory assistance was called 257 times in the billing period, and that cost $121.81. That's laziness, Fuhrer said. It's great when you just look at their phone bill like this. Well, now, of course, from here, from our particular phones, if you even try calling a 540 number, you set off a siren somewhere on campus. And usually in about an hour and a half, someone comes to ask you why you did it. Fortunately, we're off the air. This show is off the air at 12, so I'll be out of here by the time they show up. Now, okay, let's suppose we got an operator here, okay, and asked the operator if they could connect us to a 540 number. Let's see if they can actually do that, first of all. You know, I'd like to know myself. I don't think they can, though. I think that's the whole point of this thing. But we're about to find out.
New York Telephone, Ms. Lysimachia?
Yes, operator, if I use a calling card, can I call a 540 number?
I don't know. You can try it from that number, but I can't dial it for you.
Oh, so you can't dial 540 numbers at all?
No, sir.
Okay. But if I do O plus and try it that way, it might work.
It might work, yes.
Okay, thanks.
You're welcome.
Bye. Okay, now we have to try to dial an O plus call, which is very tricky here on campus, so let's see if we can get the timing just right. 540, what do you say? 540 love. Let's see what we get. I'm not going to get it. It's not going to work.
We're sorry. Your call cannot be completed as dialed. Please check the number and dial again, or call your operator to help you.
All right. Okay. Fine. No problem. Then let's try this then. Let's try putting a 212 area code in front of that. Oh, wait a minute. Wait a minute. I did something wrong. Hold on. Try that again. All right. 212-540-LOVE. See what happens. They get the same cheery voice. No need to hear that all over again. Okay. Let's try something else, then. Let's try accessing this. I'll use my Sprint card. Use my alternate long-distance company. Comes in handy for these kind of things. Okay. Enter my authorization code here. And try dialing 516-540-LOVE. Talk about a bored-sounding person. Well, let's try it again using another long-distance company. This is a long-distance company called Cable and Wireless. Okay. Enter my authorization code. And dial 540-LOVE.
We're sorry. The location you have dialed is not available for service. Please check your number and dial again. Or use AT&T for operator assistance.
Well, it seems that there's a pretty effective blocking mechanism to prevent me from calling 540-LOVE. from virtually any phone. I mean, I can just pick up my home phone and dial it and get a nice big bill in about a month. But if I'm not home, if I'm not in a particular location where they're absolutely certain I dialed it, it's very difficult. You can't call us from a payphone, and it seems kind of weird that Southampton isn't able to block those calls. They could have saved themselves $180. You know, I'm surprised it was only $180, because with calls that cost $25, $100 each, it's quite possible that you could get up into the tens of thousands. I've seen it happen, tens of thousands of dollars for these ridiculous phone calls. Well, has that ever happened to anyone out there? Is there anyone out there? What's going on here? I missed one week and everyone's gone? Give us a call, 632-6901. We've got the Tripod family. They're back. And we're going to pick things up where we left off 2 weeks ago with Howard. Where was he? He was stranded in a boat, and he found some weird desert island somewhere. I don't know. I don't know where it goes after this, but we're about to find out. Again, our phone number is 632-6901. The weather forecast. You know, things are really desperate around here when you have to read the weather. It's currently 19 degrees Celsius, 66 on the Fahrenheit scale. Tonight, we're expecting it to be mostly cloudy with areas of fog, low around 60. Sunday, becoming mostly sunny, warm and humid, high near 80. Cooler near the ocean. And Sunday night, hazy, warm and humid, low in the mid-60s. Well, well, well. That's the weather. Currently 19 Celsius and 66 Fahrenheit. Okay. If I see one more call light up, I will go to the phones. Okay? My phones are ringing, but I want to see one more call. 632-6901. Think of the power in your hands. You know, you can just call that number and change the whole direction of this program, because that's what the purpose of the show is, you know? To move with the listeners, do what the listeners want to do. You know, this is feedback hour, whatever you want to call it. We've got another hour to go, and we may even play another Two Live Crew song. If you're really good, we may play another Two Live Crew song. Is that what you want, you know? To be honest, it's only one other song I can play off the record, a double record, and only two songs, and that's pushing it. That's pushing it, folks, you know, because the ideas, the things that these songs imply could be construed as being objectionable, perhaps. You got to be real careful these days. It's getting awfully nasty out there. Good evening. Is that someone there? I wonder if this thing is all messed up again. Let's try it. Good evening.
Eric.
Ah, okay, we got a voice.
Hello.
Yeah, how you doing?
Come on. What's going down?
What's going down?
Yeah.
Well, freedom of speech for one thing, but...
that's for sure.
Don't let that ruin your night.
I was looking in the news the other day, and all those the Two Live Crew tapes.
Uh-huh.
I just, I have heard those tapes, and I've come to the conclusion that when they were barred from using explicit language during a... a concert in a club, I believe.
Right.
Now, I've heard those tapes, and the language they use is no worse than a stand-up comic's language.
Such as Andrew Dice Clay.
Exactly.
Now, there's a lot of talk as to why they picked on a bunch of black rappers and they let Andrew Dice Clay, who did his act on national TV, walk away. I'm not saying they should lock Andrew Dice Clay up, but, you know, is this a racist thing?
I don't think they let Andrew Dice Clay get away with it, because in Los Angeles, there is a group of feminists that actually spray-painted over one of his advertisements and wrote pig, feminist pig, and all that other, you know, that type of deal.
Uh-huh. Well, you know, people have the right to their opinion, but, you know, vandalism is something else.
Exactly.
But you shouldn't lock somebody up for saying something objectionable, you know? You have to defend the... I mean, of course, they're always going to attack the most extreme. They're always going to attack the people that are obscene, people that are saying racist things and disgusting things.
Exactly.
But you've got to protect them because, you know, once they're gone, then who's the extreme?
Exactly. You know what I've seen these past few months is first the art, all right?
Right.
And now the music, and I wonder what's next.
How about some publications?
Exactly. And this... more freedom in the East. And
well, that more sense of freedom in the East, for sure. More sense of freedom in the East because they haven't had it.
Yeah.
And I came up with this thought at about 4 a.m. yesterday. I suddenly woke up with a start and said to myself, "This is it. This is the thought to end all thoughts. There is nothing worse for democracy than a lack of crisis."
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because if you don't have any crisis, you stagnate. Democracy takes itself for granted,
and everybody loses democracy.
If you're not always fighting for the right to free speech, you lose sense of what it means.
Exactly.
You see, and if we've been sitting around kind of complacent, saying, "Oh, this is the greatest country in the world. If you don't like it, leave it. Don't burn the flag. All that kind of thing." And
what happens?
we're not fighting for freedom of speech anymore. And where does that leave us? You know, we start taking away freedoms because we don't see them as necessary anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of sad.
Exactly. I wonder what's next. I don't know what's going to go down.
Well, I don't want to be pessimistic. You know, a lot of bad things could happen. But then again, I think
a lot of good things could happen.
A lot of good things could happen. And I think there's a breaking point. I think that people are only going to take so much of this. Mm-hmm. You know.
Yes. All right. Thank you.
Thanks for calling.
All right. Goodbye.
All right. It's tripod time, folks. We don't want to delay them because the people do get kind of upset when we do. And again, I'm sorry about last week. I wasn't around, and tripods didn't get aired, so we're a week behind. It happens, you know? It happens to the best of us. I mean, when they had their network run, remember that ill-fated CBS half-hour comedy show about the tripods? Well, that got preempted a couple of times, and, you know, they survived. Actually, the show didn't survive, but, you know, it happens in the big leagues. It happens on USB, too. That's my point. Wasn't a very good one, I know. All right, let's get on with the tripods, and then we'll come back and take more phone calls at 632-6901. Radio Free Long Island presents The Fabulous Adventures of the Tripod Family, the story of one of America's most illustrious families and their struggle for peace and happiness in the suburbs of Long Island. Last time, as Howard was taking a canoe ride around Whitney Island while waiting to star in the first scene of Uncle Jonathan's movie, his boat became adrift and started going out to sea. Now the scene is the Tripod household on Long Island, where Kathy, Pop, and next-door neighbor Charlie are enjoying the evening air in the backyard, and we hear Kathy.
Do you think they filmed the first scene yet?
Oh, I don't know, Kathy. It can take forever to get things done sometimes. I mean, you've got to deal with so many different people.
Yes, but after all, how long can it possibly take? There are only two people in the entire cast.
Oh, you'd be surprised, Kathy.
Those directors and producers and floor managers can get pretty mule-headed sometimes.
Right.
Not to mention the actors.
That's right.
Wait a minute, Pop. Now, Howard is one of the actors. In fact, he's the only actor. And you know, he can't be defined as mule-headed.
Yeah, she's right, Mr. Tripod.
Well, maybe mule-headed isn't the word. But you have to admit that sometimes he is a real chowderhead.
Yes, that's right, too.
Now, hold on. Howard's your own son, and he's my husband to boot. I don't see how you can say those kind of things about him. And I'm surprised at you, too, Charlie, for agreeing with Pop like that.
Yes, you're right, Kathy.
I'll tell you how I can say those kind of things. Because I am his father, that's fine. And I know him better than anybody else on this entire planet. So if I say he's got a couple of screws loose, you should better believe me.
Yes, he's right about that, Kathy.
Charlie, your face just turned green.
What?
I just wanted to see if you were going to keep agreeing with everything we said.
Was I doing that?
You sure as tarnation were, Charlie.
Gee, I'm sorry. I didn't notice I was doing that. I guess it's just kind of hard to disagree with each of you.
Well, that's all right. I suppose we're all a little bit on edge, you know, with Howard so far away.
Yeah, I wonder what he's doing right now.
Probably talking with that French actress, what was her name again?
Brigitte
LaRue, yes, that's right.
That's right, yeah.
You know, I still think it's funny the way he changed his mind about being in the film so suddenly when he heard that she was going to be in it, you know?
What,
I can understand that.
Funny ha-ha or funny strange or...
Oh, well, I thought it was kind of strange. I mean, Howard doesn't usually react in that kind of... Well, what was that?
Oh, that must be my wife calling me again. I'll be there in a minute, Alice. There's no need to scream. Oh, I'm sorry, Kathy. What were you saying just now?
Well, I was just pointing out how, gosh darn it all, I can never get anything said. I'll be right back.
So, Mr. Tripod, how are you adjusting to Long Island?
Oh, I hate it. Big Bear City was my real home, and I'll probably never see it ever again in my entire life.
Well, why do you say that? You can always visit. Maybe over the summer.
No. We can never go back. You knew that, Charlie.
No, I don't know that. Why can't you go back?
You mean you don't know about the big family scandal that forced us to move clear across the country?
No, I didn't know anything.
Uh-oh, I guess I should
have... I knew there was something you folks weren't telling me.
I don't think I should have said anything.
But now that you did tell me, what kind of a scandal was it? One of those Hollywood gossip column type things?
Listen, Charlie, I shouldn't have even brought it up in the first place.
Well, be quiet now. Kathy's coming back. But I want to find out some more about this later.
Why do these things have to happen to me?
Who was that, Kathy? You look kind of upset.
That was Uncle Jonathan, Charlie. He's calling from Whitney Island. Seems that Howard is missing.
Missing?
Mm-hmm.
How could he be missing? The island's so small.
The last person who saw him said he was taking a canoe ride around the island.
Oh, my gosh. Maybe the current caught him and he's drifting out to sea.
Well, that's just great. Now what are we supposed to do? He's the only one in the house who had a driver's license.
And so the tripods find out that Howard is indeed lost somewhere in the Atlantic Ocean. What will become of him? Will he ever be found? And what about the great tripod scandal? You'll want to be with us next time when we'll hear Kathy say,
"Was Brigitte in the canoe with Howard?"
That's next time on The Tripod Family, a presentation of Radio Free Long Island and the Three Village Tobacco Farms. This is Don Topeka.
This is the phone mail system. Oh.
What's this? You don't want me to wear this. Come on, I don't need a
sock.
I want you to.
Let's hear some music!
Holier than cow.
What's it like?
Searching hell. Searching hell.
Like every Tuesday afternoon, less talk, more action from 3 to 6.
Searching hell.
Crowley aims to satisfy.
Searching hell.
To delete, push 4. Save, push 6.
Yeah, you just don't hear those kind of things anywhere else. And you will hear them here on WUSB. Oh, boy. Holier than cow, tripods, brain damage, you name it. We'll do it here. 632-6901. We had a lit switchboard, and everybody rushed off to hear the tripods. You know, you can leave the phones ringing. It's not that big a deal. 632-6901. Hey, following what's been going on in Romania, that's a lot of fun. Had a bit of rioting over the last couple of days where they called in, the government called in the coal miners of all people to rescue the government from the rioters. Well, it's kind of a complicated story, but basically, across Bucharest, people are taking stock of the whirlwind of violence and lawlessness that has swept the city in the last 2 days. On Wednesday, after the police broke up a 53-day University Square sit-in, anti-government demonstrators went on a rampage, setting fires, throwing rocks, and laying siege to state buildings. And then on Thursday, thousands of pro-government miners took revenge by pouring into the city, terrorizing pedestrians with beatings and ransacking offices and homes belonging to political opponents, one of whom was Ian Raciu. He's an opposition leader in the Romanian parliament. And they went through his house, threw papers all over the floor, broke pictures, ripped open boxes. And Mr. Raciu says, "I want to speak to the Prime Minister and the President to find out what they have in mind." He's 74 years old, and he returned this year after more than 50 years abroad to run unsuccessfully for President. Because this is a rerun of 1946, he says, and the restoration of a communist dictatorship, then of course I will have to leave. At the Institute of Architecture, known for its radical students, miners started before dawn on Thursday and, using flashlights and headlamps, destroyed books, classrooms, models of classical architecture, and seized a list of students with their home addresses.
It was like the end of civilization, said William McPherson, the Pulitzer Prize-winning American author who was writing a book on Romania after touring the building. Well, he said that after touring the building. He's not writing the book after. Boy, they can't even write in the New York Times anymore. Anyway, it was as if the Huns or the brown shirts had moved through. It made you want to leave. Even as most of the miners began to pull out of the city in government-provided buses, more cases of attacks were reported, referred to at a news conference by Prime Minister Petre Roman as unpleasant moments. Apparently under instructions to deal first of all with photographers and television cameramen, one group of miners attacked an American television crew, while the crowd of several hundred brandishing sticks and rubber hoses tried to rush the Intercontinental Hotel to get at another crew filming from a 10th-floor balcony. Since Wednesday, 236 people were treated at Bucharest Emergency Hospital, most of them treated for multiple injuries and head wounds. Marianne Montigny, I believe, who had been a leader of the student protesters, suffered a broken hand, a broken leg, and a cerebral contusion of medium gravity. Altogether, almost 400 people were reported hurt in Bucharest over the last 3 days, according to the health ministry. On Thursday, Mr. McPherson and a British journalist, both of whom had identified themselves as foreign writers, were beaten by a group of soldiers behind a truck parked next to the government's central office building on Victory Square. Mr. McPherson said he was hit in the kidneys with a club, kicked in the back, and punched in the jaw while an army major in uniform looked on. Most of the violence was done by the miners, who said they came from the Jiu Valley, G-I-U, I believe, to search for proof that the opposition to the National Salvation Front was trafficking in drugs, weapons, and counterfeit money. But witnesses say the trophies they collected were not necessarily the evidence they sought. Bottles of cleaning fluid were seized as ammunition. Copying machines were taken to be presses to make counterfeit money, so it's not very conclusive. Everyone agrees that the 2 days of violence were connected. The question was how. At a news conference yesterday afternoon, Mr. Roman said the rioting on the first day had been clearly organized, starting with the police action in University Square, which he said happened without the government's knowledge. He said the miners responded after seeing film clips of the damage on television and hearing President Ion Ilescu's appeal for help. Upon their arrival in Bucharest, Mr. Roman said they were asked to go and remain in University Square to ensure the clearing of the area, having in mind that the police force was spread thin and weakened. In certain cases, they took the power of public order on themselves, he added. We tried to stop them and generally succeeded. But, he said, we had unpleasant moments when citizens were molested. Government officials have said those who committed acts of vandalism and violence would be held responsible, but there is no evidence that victims or witnesses were being encouraged to bring cases against the miners. Some critics of the National Salvation Front, which is the party that won the Romanian elections on May 27th in a landslide, question whether the government was not looking for an excuse to crack down against the opposition. It is very clear what happened, said Paul Georgiou, a journalist with the opposition paper Romania Libera. I can't imagine a state where the elected president can't call on the army or the police and has to turn to miners. Mr. Roman confirmed today, or yesterday actually, that the army had been slow on Wednesday to respond to calls for assistance. But he said no matter who assumed control of the situation, the response of any other government would have been harder and involved fire weapons. Mr. Roman accused the foreign press of failing to give coverage to the government's version of events. In a statement on Thursday, President Ilescu also blamed irresponsible journalism for the atmosphere of confrontation in Romania. And yesterday, the staff of Romania Libera shut down on Wednesday by printers who said they would not print destabilizing material, agreed to start work again on Saturday with the same journalists and the same political contents. What a story. What an incredible story this is. You know, we saw what happened in Romania in December. We saw the downfall of a dictator, Nicolae Ceausescu, brought down, and the beginnings of democracy installed. And now what's happening? Are they going down the same road again? You know, the person that won the elections, part of the National Salvation Front, an organization accused by the demonstrators of containing lots of people from the old regime. Yet they were elected by a landslide. You know, it's hard to understand why this is happening. But one thing that seems kind of scary and sort of animal formish is the miners. You know, the miners were right away, as soon as the overthrow of the old government, the miners were given raises. Their work week was shortened, and guess who became the staunchest supporters of the current regime? The miners. And these miners will do whatever they're told now. We need you to clean up a square that has some students sitting in. They come in. They beat the crap out of them. It's incredible. And in effect, it's another Securitat, I suppose. You know, not quite as well trained, but these are people that apparently will do whatever the government tells them to do. And it's kind of scary when you don't know where the government is coming from and what the ties are to the old regime. What I don't understand, though, I really don't understand this, and if anybody has any inkling as to why this is, let me know. Why were they elected by a landslide? If there was such displeasure with the way things were, did people really think that there was no connection? I mean, the elections were generally thought to be fair by lots of people, including observers in the United States. But I can't understand. And I can't understand what's happening in this country either, where people seem to support things that I see as going against the very fiber of this country. I mean, I have a feeling, I don't know, I haven't taken a poll myself, and I haven't really seen the results of a poll, but I would think that if you went out there and asked people, do you think that there should be an amendment to the Constitution to prohibit flag burning, most people would probably say yes. I mean, they would say yes. Tamper with the Bill of Rights. Let's make an exception because we have to protect the flag. You know, and if you sit down and think about it for a little while, at least if I do, it doesn't take long to realize what a destructive move that is. You know, tampering with the very foundation of the country to protect the symbol. You know, then it's a symbol, so anything that's done against this symbol is symbolic, you know, so it's not like You're tearing down every flag in the country. It's symbolism. That's all it is. And if you can't deal with symbols, you shouldn't have a flag, I suppose. But most people would probably support that. I don't know if it's because they want to tear apart the Bill of Rights. They want to start saying freedom of speech to a degree. Some people are more equal than others, all that kind of thing. Or whether it's just because they're being misguided, because certain people in Washington are saying, if you don't believe this, you're not patriotic. That's a good way to get people to go for something. They don't want to be accused of not being patriotic. Remember McCarthyism, folks. That's a road that we haven't started down. That's a road we're midway down now. The only question in my mind is, how is it going to be remembered? Is it going to be remembered because of rap groups being arrested for performing? Is it going to be arrested for museum curators being arrested for showing exhibits? Is it going to be remembered for people supporting an amendment to the Bill of Rights? I don't know. But where's the crisis? You know, you think that there were tens of thousands of people marching around destroying public buildings and saying death to America right here in New York and Washington, you'd think there was some major crisis. I don't see a major crisis, you know. I don't see very many people using freedom of speech at all. There should be a lot more freedom of speech, but there doesn't seem to be, and this certainly isn't encouraging it. You could probably extend it to all these other crises that seem to be popping up every time you look around. Missing children. That seems to have died down a bit, but missing children. They come up with a study as to how many missing children there actually were that weren't taken by their parents. You know, by an estranged husband. Call we've had in a while. Ah, computers. Computers calling me. Happens all the time. 632-6901, area code 516. It's 23 after 11 o'clock. And I was walking through Penn Station a couple of weekends ago. And you know they've cleared all the homeless people out of there. They've kicked them all out. And the place is so quiet now. It's so incredibly quiet and clean looking. You know, you walk down the corridors and you realize that there are corridors. You can walk from side to side and there's all this space. But you're left with the nagging question: where are these people? What did they do with them? Penn Station was. Wall to wall with people who literally lived there day and night. And it was a sobering reminder to everybody that took a train into Manhattan or out of Manhattan that there's a major problem with homeless people. There's too many of them. And for some reason, things are getting a lot worse. Now they've been swept aside. We don't know where. Just out into the street, I suppose, and we don't see them anymore. Everything seems acceptable again. And I was walking through there and lots and lots of cops, you know. They have cops now that they won't let you into the waiting room unless you can show a ticket. You know, and if you sit on the floor, I saw several people doing this. They were sitting on the floor because there's no real chairs to speak of in the waiting area. The non-official waiting area, the area where everybody can walk into and not have to show a ticket. They're aren't very many chairs there. So a couple of people were sitting on the floor. And within 3 minutes after sitting on the floor, a policeman would approach you and tell you not to do that. Because you look like a vagabond if you sit on the floor. And Penn Station has an image to uphold. Well, there was this one guy that made a mistake of lighting a cigarette. This elderly gentleman. I just happened to come across this, you know, and this elderly gentleman was walking around, and I couldn't figure out why this cop was yelling at him, you know. This cop was really yelling at him, saying, put it out, you know, and I was wondering, what was this all about? What, you know, because Penn Station is so big. I see banning smoking in enclosed places, but Penn Station is so incredibly big, it's like being outdoors almost. And here was this cop who's goal in life was to make sure that this old man put out his cigarette in this spick and span Penn Station that had been swept clean of all the homeless people. For the first time in a long time, I didn't feel comfortable in that place. But speaking of cigarettes, which was sort of a convoluted way of getting around to this, there is a call for a ban on cigarette machines now in Long Island, which I don't really see a problem with. I hate cigarette machines. And somebody raised a good point. Long Beach Supervisor Bruce Nyman says, what do we need cigarette machines for? Do we have beer machines? No, so let's regulate cigarettes the same way. That's right, Nassau County is calling for a complete ban on cigarette machines. The Suffolk ban to ban cigarette machines accessible to children doesn't go far enough, according to Nyman. Why is it more dangerous for young people to smoke than for anybody else? I can tell you why. Because young people get hooked. That's when they get hooked, is when they're young, and they, hate to say it, don't know any better. Peer pressure, that kind of thing. But it's dangerous for everybody. Yesterday, Nyman sent a letter to the top Republicans in the GOP-controlled county. County Executive Thomas Gulata and Hempstead Presiding Supervisor Joseph Mondello urging action. The move comes on the heels of a proposal earlier this week by Dr. David Harris, the Suffolk Health Commissioner, to consider a ban on cigarette vending machines in sites like supermarkets, laundries, and luncheonettes, readily accessible to minors. Not the same kind of minors that they have in Romania. These are different ones. Nyman and the other Democrat on the Nassau Board of Supervisors, Ben Zwirn of North Hempstead, you can find him at the end of the phone book, also urged Republican leaders to work with Suffolk officials to draft identical laws that would provide consistent rules for all of Long Island. They have cigarette machines in this very building here on campus. I can't figure it out because you're not allowed to smoke in the building. You know? Why have them? What's the point? You buy a cigarette and run away somewhere else where you can probably buy it anyway. Although tobacco and vending industry spokesman yesterday criticized the proposals as harsh moves that would not necessarily stop minors from smoking, Nassau's Republican leaders said through spokesmen that they are willing to study the plan. We welcome this airing, make that clean airing of an important issue, said Ed Ward, executive assistant to Mondello. It's a new idea and the board will look at it closely. Joseph Taraka, president of the state's Automatic Vending Association, said there are about 10,000 cigarette vending machines on Long Island, selling up to 35 million packs a year for annual sales of up to $86 million. Our industry stands ready to work with the counties. We don't want to sell cigarettes to children, Taraka said, but we think we're being singled out unfairly. Vending machines account for only 3.5% of cigarette sales. More than a dozen municipalities in Minnesota have enacted total bans on cigarette vending machines in the past year, and partial bans to cut off accessibility to minors are in place in many other communities. I don't know if these total bans are constitutional, frankly, said Walker Merriman, spokesman for the Tobacco Institute in Washington. But I'm not surprised by this move in Long Island. Nassau and Suffolk have a history of trying to make legislation such as this. Merriman cited Nassau's and Suffolk's restrictions on smoking in public, which set the stage for a similar statewide restriction on smoking. And in Suffolk, County Executive Patrick Halpin said he welcomes the interest from across the county line. It might be a bit premature because our health commissioner is still in the process of preparing a specific recommendation, but when that's available in about a month, I'd be happy to share our findings with Nassau. Well, that's the story as far as cigarettes go. And again, you might have mixed feelings on this, you know. Yeah, you want to prevent people from smoking, but at the same time, more rules and regulations as to what you can and cannot do. You know, where do you draw the line? Where do you draw the line? I don't know. Where are the phone calls? What's going on? 632-6901. We always have lit switchboards at this time. Did someone sabotage my show last week? Ron, you were here.
Music brain damage, as far as I heard. I wasn't here. I was in hell.
That's right. You weren't even here. Nobody was here. Look, folks, come on. Whatever happened last week, it's history, okay?
One week is all it takes.
I guess so. Boy, one bad week and you're finished. You're washed up.
Come on.
Give us another chance here, folks. 632-6901. I want to see all five lines lit up here. Got nothing. Nothing at all. Maybe the phones are broken. Yes. Everything else around here is. I don't know. Look, we're going to play another Two Live Crew song. Yeah, we want to do that, but what's the point if nobody's listening, you know? All right, there's one call. Let's make that two. Come on. There's two calls. Let's make that three. This is easy. Come on. 632-6901. You all know the phone number. I've been saying it all night long, spitting my guts out about Romania, about miners, cigarettes.
Coal miners rule.
Coal miners rule. I don't believe it. Raz is up at midnight. I'm sure he'll go into that a little bit more. Erotic calls in Southampton? Come on. Okay, we only have one line left. Let's fill that line up. Come on. 632-6901. I must have had all these people in some sort of a daze, you know? They were just sort of sitting around saying, yes, speak.
Is that
what it is? Oh, no. There have to be coal miners around here somewhere, you know? Where are the Long Island coal miners? They're probably out storming Stony Brook somewhere. Ugh, that's a scary thought. Can you imagine that? Can you imagine George Bush saying, come on, coal miners, help rescue our country from these rebellious people, these people that play Two Live Crew on the air and talk in disrespectful tones of the government and those in authority. What am I saying? I'm giving people ideas here. 632-6901. Good evening.
La gorra.
Uh-huh.
La gorra.
Why are we saying this? Okay, sounds like a language tape. Well, that's very nice. Good evening.
Hello.
Yeah, go ahead.
Hey, Don.
Okay, how are you?
I was wondering if you could do something for me. About a month ago or so, when you weren't doing the show, you had somebody filling in for you.
Uh-huh.
You played a song that I didn't get a chance to record. It was called Jesus Was Way Cool.
Oh, Jesus Was Way Cool, yeah, by King Missile.
All right, listen, I was wondering if you'd be able to give it a play in a couple of minutes while I get a chance to record it.
Well, you know, that's a possibility if I can find the record. Tell you what, I'll look for the record.
All right.
And then maybe I'll play. But we need to get some more phone calls. We need to get some more phone calls. And, sir, if you want to hear that record, I suggest you say something now that'll get people to call in.
All right,
like, start a conversation or something.
$100 to each phone call.
No, we can't do that. We don't have any money here.
All right, all right.
Unless you want to give money.
You get a chance to go over the air live for millions and millions of people.
Aren't you thrilled right now by doing this?
Yes, actually, yeah, that my voice is being broadcast all over Long Island.
I mean, how many other opportunities do you have to do something like that, you know, in the course of a normal week, whether the radio station gives you this chance?
Seriously, folks, come on, let's go.
Yeah, what's wrong with you? You stupid or something? Come on. Right. We're only on for another 26 minutes, and, you know, you might not have this chance again for a while.
Exactly, a whole 7 days.
That's right.
I want to get a chance to listen to your show next week, however.
Okay, well, look, I'm going to walk all the way into the back record library area and look for your record, because
right.
That's the kind of thing we do here.
All right, thanks a lot.
Thanks for calling.
All right, take care.
632-6901. We do this kind of thing because, you know, we're on your side. You know, we're your community radio station. We're an extended part of your brain, I suppose. 632-6901, area code 516. Good morning. Good evening. Hello? Is anyone there? Yeah, go ahead.
My phone's not working.
Well, what's wrong with it?
I don't know. I'm not a phone mechanic.
Well, should I transfer you to repair?
Hold on. Let me turn my radio down.
Okay. Ooh, yeah, that sounds like a sick phone. I don't know. What kind of phone could that be?
Yeah.
Ooh, that's a horrible sounding phone, sir.
I know. It's some...
What kind of phone is that?
It's called a Miura phone.
Is it a one-piece phone?
Yeah.
It is.
Well, what do you mean by one piece?
It
has one large piece with the buttons on it, and then it has a spiral cord extending out to the receiver.
Okay, well, you see, a one-piece phone would have the receiver and the dialer all in one, and you just pick up the whole thing. It's kind of rectangular.
It's not bad, no.
Okay, that's good. Stay away from those things. They're unhealthy.
Just a cheesy little phone I got from Cheap Jones.
Yeah, well, that's the kind of cheesy things that make horrible noises when you drop them, you know, they make...
Did you miss the thing on Albania?
What thing on Albania?
The Newsday.
When? Where?
It was on a Tuesday or Wednesday, I think.
I didn't see it. What did they say?
They said they were making overtures to join, like, the European Security Council.
Okay, that I knew. I didn't see the article, but I knew they were doing that. Yeah, Albania is really turning around, you know?
Yes, too. But did you see they had an article in the New York Times like 3 months ago? It was really good on it.
I probably saw that. Yeah, they did have a few.
Started letting like the British and the Irish in.
Uh huh.
Because they're like the first foreigners to let in after I guess since the end of the Second World War.
Well, that's not true because they've been letting foreigners in for quite a while. They just haven't been letting Americans in.
Oh.
I think they're starting to let Americans in.
They just started putting English in.
Uh huh.
Because the English are in NATO.
Right.
that was like a big thing. You know, they were the Swedes and, you know, Australians, but no Americans still. But the guy said, the reporter said he talked to somebody there, and he was like, you know, it's bound to come down any day.
What's bound to come down? The government?
Yeah, well, not the government, but, you know, eventually people.
Uh-oh. You see, that's the problem with those cheap phones. You hit a button, and all of a sudden, disaster. Good evening.
Hi, Eric. It's Andrew Goldberger.
Andrew Goldberger, how are you?
All right.
Andrew, I'm going to give you a special responsibility because I trust you.
Sure.
Okay, I want to walk into the back and look for this record for this gentleman, okay? Now, I have a problem. Since I do a talk show, how can I talk and look for a record at the same time?
Because you have Andrew Goldberger on phone.
So I got you, a respected and professional disc jockey of years past, who will carry on a monologue while I'm in the back looking for the record. What do you think?
Sure.
Okay. Take it away, Andrew.
Okay, hello there.
All of Long Island is your listening audience, in case you need to be nervous.
Okay. You should call up the USB at 632-6901.
Do you have a cold?
What? No.
Your voice sounds different.
No, it's just the phone.
Oh, okay. Let me find this record.
Okay, it's 632-6901. And if we get all five calls, then Eric will be very happy. So, please call up. It's a really cool show. And Eric is in the back room now, getting a record. So, call up.
Not easy, is it, Andrew?
Oh, how do you
not
do
easy
it?
At all. Oh. Well, I just looked in the new record section. I couldn't find it, so now I'm going to have to go all the way back to the old record section. So you better think of something to say, man.
Okay, you gotta make up something. Give me something to say.
Well, let's see. Talk about flag burning, okay?
Do
you talk about that in school at all?
Sure.
Okay, talk about what your teacher said.
Okay, well, my teacher says that flag burning should be, like, it should be a law because it's freedom of, you know, whatever. It's a freedom that people should have, especially, like, immigrants that come to this country and hate it, you know. I heard there was a protest somewhere on Long Island where 12 people were arrested because of a flag burn. People burning flags in the street and just throwing them at people just to celebrate the thing. And I think compared to the Two Live Crew tape, flag burning is much more serious, you know, because first of all, like, Two Live Crew doesn't, you know, it's a lot of people listen to it, and the flag burning, you know, not that many people do. And I also heard in Florida there were 2 million tapes sold of the Two Live Crew tape before it was banned. So I really don't know what their motive was to ban it after 2 million tapes were already sold in that state. So, you know, flag burning does, seems very serious compared to the Two Live Crew. It's the USB. Phone number is 632-6901. I'm waiting for Eric Corley to get back from the room to get the record, Jesus. So, you can call up and speak your mind about flag burning or anything else you have to say. And Eric should be back soon. Eric, I gather you're back now.
Oh, boy. You know, I hate failure. I really do. You know how many kings there are in the back? We've got 40,000 records back there, and it must be about 200 that have king, you know. The King family or what have you. There's so many kings. I could not find that particular King Missile record. There's a couple other King Missile records I didn't even know about, but I couldn't find that one. It's probably there somewhere, but I just wasn't able to find it. So what I'm going to do is play it next week, all right? Sorry, I mean, it's just the way it goes.
Did you hear what I said about the flag running into Lefkoe?
Well, no, I didn't.
Oh, okay.
I won't ask you to repeat it since everybody else did.
Okay.
But I hope it was interesting.
Yeah.
You certainly got the switchboards lit up. I don't know what you said.
Oh. Well, I have one question to ask you that's been bothering me. What is a computer hacker?
What is a computer hacker? You know, I just saw the definition that is used by a dictionary. Computer hacker, according to a dictionary, a slang term, is somebody that occasionally enters a computer without authorization. But it also could mean somebody that likes to play with computers and program computers. And my particular definition is that a hacker, not necessarily a computer hacker, but a hacker is anybody that just asks a lot of questions and isn't satisfied till they find out the answers. That's my definition.
Hmm.
Why the curiosity?
Well, I was just looking through this computer catalog that I have in front of me, and it said for computer hackers only on a lot of them. So I was just wondering what a computer hacker was.
Well, can you give me an example of what some of the things are?
There's a program for the Macintosh computer called RES Edit. I don't know if you've heard of it.
Yeah, RES Edit. Why would that be for computer hackers only?
Well, I really don't know. It just goes, like, behind the scenes of the game where you can change everything around. I don't know.
Yeah, it runs in background.
Yeah.
I don't know. You know, it's probably for somebody that likes to play with their computer. I guess it's using that definition.
Right.
But, you know, it's interesting you should bring that up because computer hackers are another part of this whole, I don't know, where freedoms are being curtailed because hackers are being portrayed in a way that's very nasty and horrible to national interests and things like that. It's not that way at all, being in the forefront of the situation, I can tell you that. Computer hackers as a rule, there are very few exceptions, but there are some. But as a rule, they are simply out to explore things and find holes in systems. Now, if they find a hole in a major computer system, what do? Do you fix the hole or do you punish the hacker for finding the hole? You know, if you punish the hacker for finding the hole, then you're sort of saying the hole should have remained undetected even though the hole is really there. You know, and as a result, we're going to have all these scared kids that are afraid to explore, and you're going to have all these insecure computer systems with all these holes in them. And no one's going to really be benefiting from all that.
Yeah. Did you hear that David moved to Florida?
Well, that's a major news
yeah,
flash.
Yeah, it was in Newsday today, yep.
Oh, boy. He moved, huh?
Yeah.
To Florida.
Uh-huh.
He's not coming back, is he?
Nope. Full time.
Wow. He didn't even say goodbye.
Yeah, no. He said he was going to call you, but he's too shy. Now, I remember you were on...
Little brat won't even call, huh?
Yeah. I remember when you were on NBC.
We gave him donuts when he was up here. You know that?
And Snicker bars.
The good donuts, too. You know, the ones everyone else wanted. Doesn't even call. Moves to Florida. Huh. Well, I hope he benefited from his time up here.
Well, I remember from watching you on NBC that time on the news.
Uh-huh.
You write something about a computer hacker magazine.
That's right.
Yeah. How could anyone get, like, copies of that? Is it possible? Is it, like, on the street stands?
Well, I can give you the address.
Okay,
I can't talk about prices or anything like that over the radio, but I can give you an address if you want more information.
Sure.
Okay. The magazine is called 2600 2600.
Yep.
And that, incidentally, is the frequency used by the old phone freaks in the 1960s. What they would do is they would blast 2600 hertz over the long-distance phone line, and the billing computer would hear that, and it would say, oh, the phone call's over. It would disconnect, but you'd still have the line, and you'd be able to dial without having the billing computer register it. It's pretty ingenious, and it was what the old blue boxes of the past ran on. So that's the the background of 2600.
What kind of computer can people use for that?
Well, you see, that doesn't even work anymore. I mean, the phone company has finally caught on.
No, I'm not talking about the 2600 thing. I'm talking about what you do, the computer hacking and so on. Yeah.
Well, what I do is I publish a magazine. You know,
yeah.
I don't break into computer systems, but, you know, I'm in contact with people that are still exploring and looking around.
Yeah, but what kind of computer would you need? Because I have a Mac Plus with
that's
a hard drive.
That's just it. You know, people think that they need a computer. You need all the sophistication to log into huge corporations' databases and things like that. You don't need any of that. You just need a terminal, you know, a regular terminal you can get for $40 or something. You know, not even having a computer attached, a portable computer you hook up to a payphone. It's incredibly easy, and that's what hackers, as a rule, are trying to point out, the fact that anybody can do this. A lot of people can do it legally. They can look up your entire life story legally, and that's something that when you punish hackers, you have to wonder, are they trying to cover that up? Are they trying to cover up the fact that all this information is there for the taking, and they don't want you to know how easy it is to get? So they punish the people that find the holes. You know, and let alone there's many people inside certain corporations that have legal access to all of this. You know, they can just call up somebody's life history at an instant, and they're not committing a crime because they have access to it to start with. Anyway, let me finish giving you the address. It's 2600 P.O. Box 752, and that's in Middle Island, New York, 11953.
Middle Island, New York, and what was that area code?
Zip code 11953.
11953.
Yeah, okay. Just, you know, mention you heard about that magazine on this radio show and say you just want information.
Okay.
And,
good luck with it.
Thanks.
When is it published, like every month?
Quarterly.
Oh, quarterly, okay.
Four times a year.
Okay.
All right.
All right.
Thanks for calling, and talk to you again soon, eh? Thanks for doing that monologue. All right.
Bye.
632-6901. Good evening.
It's Eric.
Yeah?
I'd like to tell you that you found your show.
Sorry. Something happened to the button. I don't know what. Good evening. Hello?
Eric.
Yeah?
Hey, what's happening, Eric?
How you doing?
I'm all right.
Yeah?
Can I tell you a story?
If it's a short story.
Yeah, it's short.
Okay.
It's very relevant, too.
Okay.
See, this is how I perceive America now. I had a neighbor, and he was a real church-going kind of guy, you know, and lived right next door to me. I knew him really well. He's the kind of guy who had the preacher over, you know, say once a week, you know, from church, and really involved. And then all of a sudden he left his wife, and he went out with some Swedish woman, and then he came back to his wife. He came crawling back on his knees.
A Swedish woman, they'll do it every time, but...
No. Well, he came back, crawling back to his wife on his knees, and then she took him back, and he went into business, and he stopped going to church.
Uh-oh.
And now he's like a big success, and I happen to know that he's he's into some not so on the up and up business deals, and now he flies the American flag proudly from his porch, and I get to see it from my window every day that I'm there.
Well, you know, people use the flag for many different things, but the flag is a flag. It represents what the country was founded for, and anybody that uses it to their advantage in any way, I think, is a big phony, you know? I mean, I see the flag, and I say that's, you know, the flag of my country, and it stands for what the Constitution is all about, but I don't wave the flag. I don't say, you know, I represent the, you know, everything that this country should strive for. You know, all that kind of posturing is just, it's very suspect, you know? Why do people make their points and hang up? I don't understand that. They just sort of disappear. And this phone system is, you don't hear the person hanging up. You just suddenly look and the little red light is not anymore. I don't know. People just can't deal with being on the radio sometimes, I guess. Good evening.
Yeah, hi.
Yeah.
Yeah, I want to talk about this flag burning you got going here.
Okay, go ahead.
What's up with burning the flag, you know?
I don't know. Why is it such a big issue all of a sudden?
Well, I don't. You know, I think if you feel like burning the flag, you really shouldn't live in America then.
Well, isn't that a part of living in America, though? The right to be able to express yourself? Isn't that what the country was founded for?
Well, express yourself is one thing, but going out and burning the American flag is something totally different.
Does it say that in the Constitution?
written in paper, no.
So, I mean, the Supreme Court has said twice now that burning the flag, although, you know, unacceptable to many people, is a valid way of expressing yourself and should be protected as such.
Well, would you burn the flag?
I don't think that's the point. You know, I never even thought about it before all this controversy started. But I think you have to, you know, you have to grant people that you find totally repellent, and that includes people like in the American Nazi Party and the Ku Klux Klan. You know, I find these people repellent, but they have the right to exist. You know, if you deny them the right to exist, if you deny people the right to put out records that you think sound terrible or, you know, use bad language, I think you're hurting that symbol a lot more than anybody that would just burn the cloth. You know, I think you're hurting the American flag by tampering with the Bill of Rights.
Well, no, as far as I think with the music, with the True Life Crew,
mm-hmm.
if you don't like it, don't buy it.
Right.
Don't interfere with the rights of other people who want to listen to it. You got a problem with it, just don't buy it. Nobody says you have to.
That's true.
With the American flag, you know, people died to keep this country what it is. And now people are, you know, they're living in the luxury of our country for the people who died for it, and then they go and abuse it by burning the flag. You know, if these people don't like America, you know, go buy a ticket and go live in Arabia or something, you know?
Well, how about try to change it? Do you think they should try to do that?
I think there should be a law against it. People get caught burning flag, man, or lock them up in jail.
Let's forget flag burning for now, but if somebody doesn't like this country, they either leave it or they try to change it, right?
Well, the country is the way it is. America, you know, I grant, you know, there is some faults to it, but if you just don't like it, you know, if you think, you know, Russian and communism is better, you know, take a hike. Nobody's keeping you here.
Well, you know, it's interesting. What sounds like you're saying is that we shouldn't try changing if we don't think something is right. I mean, what if you don't agree? You know, if you don't agree, you mean you have to leave if you don't agree?
Well, I didn't say that. You know, if you disagree, disagreeing is one thing. But when you take it out, you know, you're taking out your whole symbol when you do something like burning the flag. You know, I'd like to find out, you know, who got the bright idea to take a torch to it.
Well, you know, that's my point too. I didn't see very many people running around burning the flag, and no one really even thought about it that much until all this got brought out into the limelight. And I think, you know, the people that object to it are the ones that have brought it into the limelight more than anyone else. Like George Bush has talked more about flag burning than the people that burn the flag, I think, and that has incited other people to say, well, I've got the right to burn the flag, and I think more flags have burned as a result of this. Now, let me just bring up one point. A couple of weeks ago, you had the verdict announced, the Bensonhurst verdict, you know, and the, I believe it was the Mandela verdict, where people didn't feel that it went far enough. He was acquitted of murder, manslaughter, whatever, and afterwards, there was a mob running through the streets of Brooklyn, burning the American flag. And I thought at the time, you know, that's, you know, yeah, obviously it's going to offend a lot of people. But if they weren't burning the flag, what would they have been burning? You know, what would they have been doing instead?
I think it was just an excuse for them to, you know, get rowdy in the streets and stuff. There was no cause to burn the American flag.
Well, they felt justice had eluded them. They felt that the system didn't work.
That's a pile, and they know it, because every time, like, something on TV, somebody murders somebody, and, you know, these people get into it, and if they don't like the way the verdict is, it's just another excuse for them to get into a riot in the street.
But there wasn't a riot in the street. There was a flag burning. You see what I'm saying?
Well, you know, there could have been a riot.
There could have been, but I think they were able to give off some of that energy burning that symbol. And I think if they didn't burn the symbol, they would have burned something that wasn't the symbol.
Well, you know, I think as far as burning the flag is, if you want to burn it, you know, go in your backyard and burn it. But don't go out and do it in public. I wouldn't really care if you burn the flag in the privacy of your own home, you know, set your house on fire in the process. But don't do it in front of me, because I'll get out and kick your butt. I'll kick the crap out of anybody I see burning the flag. That's offensive to me, because I love this country. And, you know, if you want to go burn a flag, take a hike. Ain't nobody keeping you around.
All right, well, I think we're pretty much at a deadlock here, but thanks for calling.
Yeah.
All right. And we'll take one more call, 632-6901. If we're taking one more call, I don't know why I'm giving out the phone number, but good evening.
That's your dick.
Well, that's why I gave out the phone number, so we get one more legitimate call, 632-6901, see if anybody's out there with a brain. 4 minutes to midnight, and Raz is coming up, and I'm wondering, should I just go into the... I do have another Two Live Crew song sitting here, so, why not? Why not go into that? Yeah, it's been fun, folks. It's been real. It's been intense, all that kind of thing. All right, I'll give you one more chance. Good evening.
I think the sense...
What is wrong with this phone? Good evening.
Hi.
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 A female caller. Oh, boy.
What?
Sorry, I don't mean to react, but we don't ever get any female callers. I don't know why that is.
I was listening for a while, and I was thinking, gosh, there's no female out there calling. But
I don't know why, but I'm sure that's not why you called.
I don't know. I just called because I think that this show is really interesting, and I feel bad that those people are calling in and not saying such nice things, but... And I thought the last caller was sort of interesting, too, because I don't really think it's good to burn the flag, but, I mean, it was nice to hear someone who was patriotic and stuff about the country.
Right.
I don't know. I'm not exactly one to go out and burn the flag, but I'm not one to take a stance against it either, but it was sort of nice to hear someone who was actually proud of the country. And
well, you know, I like to hear people that are proud of the country, too, but it unnerves me when they say, if I see somebody doing this I don't like, I'm going to beat them up.
Right,
you know,
right.
That doesn't hit... That's the miners in Romania all over again, you know. You should be able to take something like that. Somebody, you know, says something offensive. Okay, that's part of free speech. People say things that I find, you know, if I hear Bush say something that I don't like, am I going to want to go out there and shoot him or because he says something nasty? You got to take these things. That's all. Tolerance is a part of the 20th century.
Definitely. I definitely agree with you. Totally.
Right. And, you know, I think burning the flag is the least of it. You know, if you start messing with the First Amendment and the Bill of Rights, then the flag is not going to mean much anymore.
I agree.
Well, that's good, I guess. I don't know.
I know you probably want people who are going to give you other opinions and stuff, but I think I agree with you. But
yeah.
I just wanted to tell you I enjoyed listening to the program, and that was it.
Okay. Well, thanks for calling.
Hey, take care.
All right. And the program is over. Yes, it's all over now, folks. Forget it. Go home. It's finished. It's 11:58. Brain damage is done. And Two Live Crew is on turntable number one. Yes, Two Live Crew, as nasty as they want to be. This is a song called Reggae Joint. And if you are offended by this, don't listen to it. That's the rules of the game, you know. And in fact, Power Surge is up next. And if you're jittery, if you're easily offended, go to sleep, you know. Watch something on TV. I think the Honeymooners are on or something. You know, we don't mean to be obnoxious. Yes, we do. We need to be obnoxious. We don't mean to be... what's the word? Disrespectful or anything like that. And we don't play obscenity. We just don't do it because we've got taste here. We've got our own standards. Listen to USB and you'll find out what that means. This is WUSB Stony Brook Program's Brain Damage. We'll be back next week. Let's go out to Live Crew here on Long Island's first station of the 90s.
Don't take it, don't give it, bend down. Oh, don't take it, don't give it, bend down.
Death to Guido's.
Power. A position of ascendancy over others. Surge. To rise and fall actively. Power. Physical might. Mental or moral vigor. Surge. A sweeping onward, like a wave of the sea, or a motion. Power. Force or energy used to do work. The time rate at which work is done. Surge. A transient, sudden increase of current in an electrical surface. Power surge.
Caution, this album may be considered offensive.
Undefined.
Power is almost dead for